So we get this homogenized kinds of content. And we could just as, I don't think it would change the content of what we see and hear in our broadcasting if they had big central, like as in most countries, big central broadcasting facilities in Washington or New York and no local ones. Well, that means something very special in the United States that is not true elsewhere. The United States, unlike most other industrialized democracies, leave central functions of government to the local communities. Schools, which are locally controlled. Zoning laws, locally controlled. Police, locally controlled. Most taxes, locally controlled. In other industrialized democracies, that's settled in other countries, and then by the national government. So when we begin homogenizing our broadcast content that's divorced from local affairs, we lose a very important part of what we do when we vote every election day. And yet I think that if you did a random, unscientific, unstratified sample and just went out into the streets here and asked 100 people at random who came along, you know, when you listen to the television, who do you think owns that spot on the dial that you or that channel when you get it? I think they would answer either the person who's the station owner or the network or the advertisers, and they would not know that they own that spot, that they have the power collectively as individual citizens to decide who's going to own that station's for the period of years that it has a license. The license is granted merely theoretically as a rented out to them for good behavior. But now, for all practical purposes, the big corporations have it and get it automatically, no matter what they do or don't do. And I think they've stolen public property, which now has gone to the highest bidder. And so I congratulate Paul Sawyer, Henry Kroll, UUA, and the others who are going to bring a lawsuit that will challenge some of these things that are going on. And no matter what happens to that lawsuit, the fact that there would be a lawsuit would be a wake-up call. And that there are ways in which the powerful broadcasters might lose a little sleep. About 20 years ago, Gay and Lesbian Alliance in Philadelphia, the head of it, called me up and said, listen, you know, they do terrible things when they depict gays and lesbians, but they also have, in Philadelphia, give very little attention to other organizations. And what can we do? And I said, well, you have to get allies. You have to have a coalition, not just gays and lesbians. Have them in there because that's important. But get others too. And when the renewal time comes, challenge the licenses. Now, chance of challenging a license will very seldom, in an individual case, work because they will hire the highest priced lawyers in the country, and they now have a very an FCC that's sympathetic to them. But the fact that there is a court case, it would be reported, I think, in the important place. Wall Street Journal would report it. I think the New York Times would report it. If there is a lawsuit challenging that, then I think it would be something that people had not thought of before, because there's a whole generation that's forgotten what used to be the practice and the regulations and the laws that gave communities, local communities, some voice in what happened to their broadcasting. So I'm delighted and endorse what Paul and Henry and UUA and others are doing here. And I just remind you that anyone else who has some ideas on this, that broadcast licenses are granted to the when renewal time comes, or when someone new wants a license, on the same year in particular states. So, for example, in California, every radio and television station license comes up for renewal in the year 2006. Not too early to start organizing, because it comes up for renewal, for and which otherwise would be automatic under the present FCC. But if it is a lawsuit challenging it, suddenly, if there are people who are organizing and making speeches about it and it gets into the newspapers, I think the broadcasters would notice that, because it would tell them, you know, we haven't put them all to sleep yet. We haven't mesmerized them so that they don't care what's on the air as long as it's sexy enough and violent enough. Or groups in individual cities can challenge all the stations' licenses when they come up for renewal in L.A., in the Bay Area, in 2006. In the meantime, I think the Democratic Media Project is getting to the basic challenge, and I think that's part of what will stimulate a generation, which is too young to remember what it was, but a generation that now includes who organize themselves by the Internet. I mean, who would have thought that a group of thoughtful students who trained how to use nonviolence would force the powerful World Trade Organization to have a meeting in a country that nobody had heard of, or in a city that nobody had heard of, and that was very hard to get to because they were afraid. They were afraid. And so we are not up against a giant totally immune to the sense that they could be called to account. And so I applaud what's happening in this lawsuit, and I hope it'll get full support. I thank you. You get maybe questions, I can't guarantee answers.
I don't know if it would help. Is this one on yet?
You described our system before 1996 and the mid-80s as being much more like what we want now. Are there existing models in other countries of what we want now in our mass media system?
Yes, I think one of the great ironies is that at the end of the World War II, we had defeated Japan, and we put in their American commission to reconstitute the post-World War II Japanese government, to put it on a democratic basis. And the American Commission said to the Japanese, no modern nation should be without a non-political, non-commercial broadcasting system. And we, the Americans, mandated that the Japanese establish NHK, which is the most capacious non-commercial broadcasting system in the world, and gets its money not from the parliament, but from a tax on TV sets, and the BBC, which does the same thing. It doesn't come out of parliament. It comes from a tax on TV, which is fixed. And there have been various plans in the United States over the years that hope to do something like that. So it isn't that there haven't been solutions and working solutions. That is why when you go to England, you will hear, and if you go to Japan, you will hear ideas on the radio and on television that cover the entire spectrum of their politics. You do not hear that on ours. So it does exist, it does work, and there's no excuse for saying it's impossible.
Would you comment on the newspapers, Ben? Newspapers.
Newspapers are part. Almost all our newspapers are parts of big conglomerates. They have one moderating influence, is that they're staffed by professional journalists, most of whom have some standards, personal and professional, plus the fact that they are rooted in a community, usually. And they are mostly monopolies. 99.9% of our daily papers are monopolies in their own city. But they're the only medium that has information on a subject in detail and depth. Because they broadcasting can't do it because they're a one-at-a-time medium. A newspaper can run a 2,000-word article, and if the reader's not interested, he or she shifts the eyeballs to across the page or to a different page until there's something that person is interested in. In radio, if you had 2,000 words, people who aren't interested would tune off. So you get 1, 2, 3 sentence items on the national news. A national news on-camera person feels that they've had a triumph if they get 90 seconds. Well, you aren't going to get a detailed description of a Homeland Defense bill in 90 seconds. In a newspaper, there's a better chance you will. And because newspapers are local and depend on local people buying it, they are under greater pressure to do this, and they have a over 200 years of tradition in which, and especially in the last 50 years, journalists have taught, they got ethics. I get calls from ex-students saying, listen, I'm being asked to do things I think aren't really quite right, and I always tell them, make a case, do your homework, go to your local editor, lay it down without screaming, and the point, at the very least you do, is make them feel guilty. Because they know what the ethics are, because they put out very fine statements on the ethics. So I think the newspapers are important because of the detail, and because they're local, and you can have they don't like too many local people getting in touch with them and saying, I think you're very unfair, and here's why. So I think they're important, but they are parts of the big conglomerates, and they are different one from the other. Rupert Murdoch use his papers are propagandistic or largely involved with looking at the human character below the belt. And on the other hand, there are other big chains that have come from a tradition of 50 years ago in which their staffs are more ethical and more diligent. So I think that they're a useful medium, and I think they're going to be here for a while because they have detail, and they have to deal with local affairs, which the national media do not do.
You've been listening to former reporter, Pulitzer Prize winner, and former dean of the Graduate School of Journalism at the University of California at Berkeley, Ben Bagdikian. He spoke in Pasadena on November 15, 2002 at Troop Memorial Unitarian Church at an event organized by the Democratic Media Legal Project, a joint project of Unitarian Universalists for a Just Economic Community and the Cultural Environment Movement. They're working with attorneys from the National Lawyers Guild and the National Coalition of Concerned Legal Professionals in conjunction with the Media Alliance of San Francisco. Together, they're working to file a groundbreaking legal case to challenge the broadcasting monopoly. They are demanding that the people's airwaves be democratically managed with adequate financing of a larger public broadcasting sector in the public interest. If you want to learn more about the lawsuit and how you can get involved, you can call 415-387-9190 or email dmlc@igc.org. The project is also online at www.medialegalproject.org. This has been Radio INCLA, a joint project of the Los Angeles Independent Media Center and Kill Radio. The LA INC is online at www.la.indymedia.org. That's la.indymedia.org. Kill Radio is at www.killradio.org. Radio INC LA webcasts every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Pacific Time. We're an all-volunteer organization, and if you have an idea for a future show or you'd like to get involved, please drop us a line at radioincla@doityourself.com. If you enjoyed this show, please tell a friend and tune in again next time to Radio INC LA.